Welcome to Success Authority's Conversation Street with Leadership Authority Peter Beaumont and with Business Culture Authority Ron Lehman and me, Linda Ruland, Success Authority's founder.
Employees' attitudes haven't changed when employees' expectations have. And so we need to woo, find ways of wooing and find ways of having gone through the dating procedure and put the ring on, making sure that we keep the marriage going, for want of a better analogy. And so I don't think that's being done, number one. Number two, so, and it's about managing expectations. So Tally, you've hit on a really good point, which is that age group particularly, and I don't want to hit on them, it's not fair because I think they're people like the rest of us, but they do have a tendency to want to have a lot more money. I've got, you know, my own daughter, I hope she never watches this, is wanting 65 grand when she comes out of university for its first job. Now, I know what we're hiring her. And so there's this, she's 22. There's this expectation, I'm going to get a lot more money. And so I think we need to switch. We need to do a better job of, as employers, I'm talking as an employer, selling and marketing what we're offering and looking at, taking a hard look at what it's like for somebody to come into our company and what can we actually offer them once we've got them? What can we, and that's part of the trial. And then when they come, how do we keep them there and deliver on the promise? And I think that, it's very simplistic, I know, but I think that's probably one of the issues we have got at the moment. Employees are not doing that. And that's one of the reasons why we're not keeping them. And they're going, nah, not interested. I would pose that.
Defining those non-monetary benefits that is difficult, but really important as you're trying to sell a job to a prospective employee. It's also great for prospective employees to know, what are the non-monetary things that I'm looking for?
Absolutely.
And I would never have been able to make that discussion in my own head at 22. I'll just say that in defense of your daughter. I wasn't thinking about anything about that. But I think, you know, it goes to the nature of humans, is that when all we have, when the clearest thing we have to compare between two jobs is the money, well, I guess that's how we'll decide. Just like anything. I mean, if all, you can't really figure out the rest of it. Think about buying a new car. They go through all the benefits, none of which make any sense to me. So it comes down to price.
So,
and that's how I think jobs have become commoditized, because it's easier to figure out the money, except in the, you know, example I gave earlier where people leave and then they go, oh, now I know what the intangibles were. And I think companies have to do a better job of understanding what those are and making that case for people.
I agree. And again, to her defense, this was the salary, but that was on top of all the other things she wanted too, right? So in terms of the job, the ideal job, and it would give her this and it would give her, so that was just part of the package. But so I think you're right. I just wrote down, what are the non-monetary things that we need to offer? And they can be, I think there are a few companies I've read about that are being smart about this now. They're offering 4 weeks vacation, right, instead of the standard three. Or they're being much more flexible at when that vacation can be taken. Or they're offering, we are offering, for example, paid 12 weeks maternity leave, fully paid. You know, I know in California, New York, that's something that they have to do, but not here. And so I think that those kind of benefits, especially in the millennial thing, if you're talking about maternity and stuff, is actually a really good way of going. But I'm not sure that we've, to your point, Ron, I mean, we're just touching the surface on this. We haven't got down and said, okay, what are the critical, what is important to the people that we want to hire and come in to our company? What are they? What's the checklist? And what's the priorities to them? Right. Now, is there some way financially we can make that work?
Mm-hmm. And culturally make that work too. Because
I'm waiting for you to bring that up.
There's probably not one size that fits everybody. It's, you know, what are the things that, you know, we might have a number of intangibles and everybody gets them all, but which are the ones that we want to emphasize with a prospective employee? Because maybe I don't care about taking 4 weeks of vacation, but right. I do care about the maternity leave. Or yeah. do I have some flexibility in my day or in the week or, you know, whatever it is. And I know that that's a difficult thing to sort of do the cafeteria style benefits thing. I think, you know, it's worth looking at to say, can we tailor our approach? And also be really honest about it, because I think if you ask most, if I go into and I'm looking for a job, they're going to describe their culture really in glowing, fabulous terms. And if I talk to employees, I may get a whole different view of what it really is like. And it might not be better or worse. It's just different. So I think we have to be honest with ourselves about saying, what kind of a place is this to work?
We get into some of the things Ron's talking about, some of that culture piece, like knowing who your business is, that employment branding question, kind of why does somebody want this job? If you work there, why do you love that company? What, you know, what would the employees say about that? Not what the managers say about it, but what does the team say about it? Those types of things. So we definitely get into all of those conversations.
I have no idea why you wouldn't want the management to actually. We recently did an organizational checkup. Actually, it's a few months ago now, last October. And we did it for the warehouse, the sales and leadership. Leadership had done it two or three times before, and it's in EOS. And nobody normally correlates. I've never seen anybody do it before, but I correlated the marks between sales, warehouse and leadership. And I think these guys have heard this before. And leadership, the gaps were enormous between what leadership thought they were doing and what sales and warehouse saw that they were doing. And so, not surprising, but actually validated with data. And so we took steps to change the culture here. And I was waiting for Mr. Culture to say something, Ron, about culture. And so, we just did the annual meetings, and the scores are much closer now than they were before already, just right. in that time. And so I completely and utterly subscribe to the fact that, yeah, there is a gap between what leadership thinks they're doing and what the rest of the world. But I agree, we need to find out what the people who work there really think. And then going back to what you said, Ron, about the almost a menu, I use your car analogy, it's what are the optional extras you're offering, right? And I think we have to do that. Yeah, not all of that in that list will be all encompassing. There'll be some things that some people will be interested in, some will not. But if you're hitting those top, whatever it is, 5, 10 that people are looking for, and it's not difficult to find out. There's so much surveys and research now on this subject. I found out on my Sunday that you can compile your list fairly easily and then play it past your workforce. Mm-hmm. See, what I found is a trap for people also is when you start offering it to people coming in, the owner says, oh, God, I now got to offer it to everybody who already works here. And it hits a stumbling block almost straight away. It's like, now I've got to bring everybody else's salary up. Now I've got to offer, you know, 4 weeks lead. That tends to be a barrier.
Right. The internal equity questions are constant conversations, just because to get somebody in at the same price as somebody that's in a similar job is just, it won't happen.
Exactly.
And that price is, you know, vacation is money, all those different things.
Yeah. The trouble is we start entering, it's not just black and white data. It's that horrible subjectivity area, right, around culture, which few people really understand how to build and or maintain, and objectively identify what the results are.
Tally, do you find that because of all this change in the difficulty of hiring, do you find that prospective employees are coming in a little better prepared than, or, and I don't want to say a list of demands, but they're clearer and they have more questions than they used to when it was, when can I start? That was the question. I really want the job. I'll say whatever I need to. Do you find that's changing at that side of things?
Yeah, I'd say that people, if you engage them in the process that they are, if they're wanting themselves to engage into a search, they've got a more, they seem to have a more clear direction in terms of what they're looking for, in terms of the job, and again, in terms of compensation, in terms of the company. So I'd say job seekers are maybe better prepared because they're the buyers now. Versus the tables have turned that, in past markets where we have high unemployment, they don't have as much choice. So, and there's more data out there. I mean, I was looking like kind of one of the questions for us for salary, we think, is that the numbers are published now. I mean, there's more information for them. So there's Glassdoor. You can research and see what somebody's getting paid. Indeed.com, where 70% of the jobs have a price on them. So that prospective employee can actually see what is being offered for the money. So that itself has made it a more competitive market. So I think they have more information when they come to the interview.
The other thing I've noticed about Glassdoor and Indeed is that they actually do reviews. So the employees, your prospective employees, can give reviews of the companies. And then the other thing it tells you is how many jobs are open. And I don't know, are employers aware of all this data that's available to the prospective recruit?
Not all the time. Sometimes we get to point that out.
Yeah, I just, it probably says something about a prospective employee too, if they've at least done the basic due diligence to come in with some knowledge, as opposed to, well, what do you guys do around here? That kind of shows a level of interest that I think would be good. But I want to just share a story that I heard recently about Zappos, the online shoe and clothing store. And there was an article, and I don't remember where it was, but it was about how they hire for culture, and cultural fit is like the first thing that they look for. Now, I don't know if that's changed with the current hiring environment, but at any rate, they have 10 core values. My favorite is create fun and a little weirdness. That's one of their values, which I thought was interesting. So, but one of the things is they have a cultural fit interview that they do. And after, if someone's hired, they have 3 to 4 weeks on the job. And if the company decides they're not really committed to the culture and values, they offer them $3,000 to leave, which I think is really, given the current situation, if that's still happening, that's pretty amazing. But the other thing I found really interesting was that if someone comes to I think their headquarters is in Portland, maybe. But if someone comes to interview and comes to Portland, they send a car service to pick the person up. And then they're driven to the headquarters. And one of the things they do is interview the driver and say, how was the person on the drive over? Were they friendly? Did they talk to you? Did they, engage in conversation, or were they kind of distant? And that's sort of the first hurdle. And they say, if the driver says, nah, this person was a real jerk, you don't even get the interview. They just say, thanks for coming. So they're looking at that all, sort of going in. And so I guess my question, Tally, is, do you find more or less or the same of that going on, that they're looking for people who not only are willing to take the job, but there's a cultural fit.
Yeah, so I'd say more companies are, again, maybe letting some of that go, but there's some of our clients that still is, like, they will stick it out. And, you know, it takes twice the amount of time to find somebody, but they're not willing to lower the bar. So it really depends on the company, how committed they are to that, you know, the cultural bar or whatever sort of piece that they're looking for. And there's some, you know, the desperation that they just absolutely need a body in the spot and they're willing to take one. I mean, it's maybe the wrong answer, but it really isn't a wrong answer either. If that's, you know, that you need a Band-Aid for now, and hopefully you need to do that to keep things going how you want. So without judgment, but it happens both ways.
But it can be a really expensive bet. Mm-hmm. On people. And then, but at the same time, if you believe in your culture and believe that your culture can educate and help people kind of fit in, if that's part of it, it's not just, okay, you either fit or you don't, get out. But if it's, you know, we're going to help you try and be committed to these values and culture, we're going to reinforce that. But at the same time, we're also going to deal with it when it's not happening, which circles us all the way back to the old toxic employee. and by the way, it's thrilling if you only have one.
Yeah.
You know, it's emotional contagion. If somebody's the skunk at the picnic, there will be more skunks soon. I mean, that's just how that works.
So I think it's interesting that the company offered 3,000 for them to leave, whereas most companies now, it's the other way around. They're offering 3,000 for somebody to sign on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it's things have just changed so much. So I've got another question as you were going through that story for all of us, I suppose, in a way. Is this a moment, as Pink Floyd said, is this a momentary lapse of reason? A well-known track by Pink Floyd. You know, is this a glitch, or is this something that we're going to have to live with for the foreseeable future? And I think a lot of people are seeing it as a momentary lapse. My view, it's not. I think the employment market has changed. But that's just my view. What's everybody else think?
So, you know, there's different things it could happen if something, you know, dramatic happens in the market and unemployment shifts. I mean, that does, you know, if that the supply and demand piece changes, then that's a dramatic shift. And that's happened if there is a cycle. So over the 20 plus years that I've been doing this, you know, I've seen a few of them. So my feeling is that eventually it will shift, but all the other statistics about just the size of our population, there's nothing that's going to change the ship unless there's dramatic changes, in my opinion, in kind of economy or, you know, some other sort of, you know, pandemic type level event.
So I agree. And I think the reason I don't think it's going to change is supply and demand may change a little bit, but I think it's like the cat's out of the bag. Our younger people coming through into employment are not going to change the fact that they want a menu of choice. And there's certain things that are conditions almost about where they're going to go. And if they don't measure up to those, they're just going to hop. They don't have that built-in loyalty that we used to have years ago, I don't think. And at least that's what we're seeing, right? People are staying in jobs for 2 or 3 years now.
Well, then, you know, I grew up in a time where if you were going to leave a job, you certainly didn't do it before you had another one.
Yeah.
And that fear seems to be gone in many people now. It's just, I don't like this, so I'm leaving and then see what else is out there. And I kind of admire that in a way, that sort of saying, I'm going to make myself or find myself a place where I can, you know, enjoy work and given as soon as you start adding up how much time you spend doing it, You know, I kind of admire that in a way. And frankly, I think that would be a pretty good employee to have, someone who knows what they want, as long as I can deliver it.
Yeah, it's pretty ballsy. I mean, I can remember I was changing jobs. I was moving out to the Middle East. I didn't know at the time, but I interviewed for the job. And I had to cover myself for a day and a half to get to Switzerland, stay overnight, have the interview in the morning and get back in the afternoon. And actually ended up getting that job. But that's the kind of the world we lived in then. I didn't just go, ah, sorry, I don't like this. I'll go out and find something else.
Yeah.
Right.
Tally, circling back to your comment about the fact that it's really almost impossible to try and be equitable in terms of salary with the current market demand on personnel, are you finding that there are substitutions for that? Are there things that people will consider valuable enough to say, hey, I'll take the salary just so long as this is or that is included?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So what we're finding is that the number, whatever that number is, there, it has to be in the ballpark for the conversation to start. So if we're in a recruiting mode and then we need to reach out to people that are currently employed, whatever that number is for the job, it needs to be there, at least that minimum. And then once that's met, then that's where some of those other things come into play. So it might be, you know, the working hours or the flexibility or, you know, and that the number is, you know, the number is the salary, but it's also the big number. You know, healthcare is obviously a huge question. So if it's, you know, family coverage, all of a sudden, you know, if you have somebody with a family that's, you know, $15,000 a year that they're, you know, getting covered versus $15,000 they have to pay. So there's different things, but to just have that conversation, whatever the number is, it needs to be there. So if we're working with a company that has a position that's below market rate, then that's, you know, it's dead in the water. You can't even, you know, push the boat off the dock. So
that's just another thought. That's why I like this format. Just keep spinning off with different thoughts. And the thought that I came to is, you know, I wonder if when we do job descriptions now and put them out there, whether the employer should have, here's what we offer you. You know, great medical benefits, a growth culture. We particularly, to close the gap, have events, you know, every quarter, and especially one around the holiday period. You see where I'm going, and I think those should be in. And I'm thinking of some of the job descriptions I've written over the last 2 years. None of that was in there. It was just the job description. That was pretty much it, right? And contact.
and right, it should be in the ad. I mean, a job description and a recruitment ad for me are two completely separate documents. But yeah, definitely some companies that do a better job recruiting have, you know, all of that in their ad, or talking about why.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I think that's, I've never thought about putting that in, you know, before, but now I am. And I'm sure you'd be more successful if you added that element.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Conversation Street. For more information or to submit a question, email successauthorities@inquire@successauthorities.com.